Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of March 12th, 2018. Today we're joined by our frequent guest, Ms. Mariah Tinker. How are you doing, Mariah?
I'm well. How are you?
Good, good. We're also joined by the prolific commentator, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing, D.R.?
Doing well. How are you doing?
Good, good, good. Good to have you both along, as always. So on this show, we have, at times, gotten out our yellow legal pads and pretended that we graduated from a prestigious law school and talked about legal cases that have to do with climate. One of the things that comes up when we talk about legal cases involving climate is an idea that dates back hundreds of years in the Western tradition that the government has the government holds public properties like rivers and harbors as a public trust, and that the government has a responsibility to maintain and preserve those natural features of the planet for the good of the population. And of course, that has for many years been the justification for the Army Corps of Engineers dredging the Mississippi River and dredging harbors and all kinds of good stuff, right? Because the government holds that in trust for all of us, for our mutual well-being. Anyway, that concept of the public trust has recently been applied to climate issues in the sense that the government has been violating its trust to preserve the air and the planet as a hospitable place for the benefit of future generations. And so, given that as the context, that there is this legal context for suits, lawsuits that have been brought. There was some breaking news this past week, and DR, tell me, what has happened in the realm of public trust lawsuits that we ought to know about?
Well, a three-judge panel of the 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals in California has rejected an effort by the Trump administration to throw out the Kelsey Giuliani versus United States lawsuit. That's the lawsuit by 21 young plaintiffs basically claiming that the federal government for the past several decades has effectively violated the constitutional rights of the plaintiffs to a stable climate by failing to take aggressive action to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. The Trump administration was basically trying to say, in effect, that there was no basis to allow the lawsuit to go forward. However, the three-judge panel ruled that the Trump administration's claims did not have any merit and basically said that the case could go forward. Now, it is expected that the Trump administration will appeal all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court in an attempt to kill this case. And in a curious portion of the ruling, that the Ninth Circuit seemed to indicate that this would that the Supreme Court would kill it because they write, quote, "We're mindful that some of the plaintiff's claims as currently pleaded are quite broad, and some of the remedies the plaintiffs seek may not be available as redress," unquote. Now, that's a very curious phrase, because it seems to indicate something that we've discussed before, mm-hmm. The idea that the Supreme Court will ultimately essentially strangle this lawsuit due to fear that you don't want to have a situation where a federal court essentially rules that the plaintiffs do in fact have a right to a stable climate, and therefore those who have violated their right to a stable climate are effectively behaving in an unconstitutional fashion. We've discussed before, you would effectively have to declare, in order for the plaintiffs to win, you would have to, on some level, have to have a federal court declare the domestic fossil fuel industry unconstitutional.
Right,
and
so,
it's hard to imagine a right-wing Supreme Court allowing that to go through.
So I guess I want to back up, because every time we talk about these legal cases, things are a victory when they don't happen. It's mm-hmm. so confusing. I mean, the bottom line here is that if the original case from the 21 high school kids claiming mm-hmm. that the federal government had abdicated its responsibility to protect the climate, what you're saying mm-hmm. is if that case went all the way through and the Supreme Court agreed, then there would be you'd almost be outlawing the fossil fuel industry. I mean, it would open this Pandora's box, maybe a good mm-hmm. Pandora's box, of these remedies to address these terrible things that have gone on because the Supreme Court has ordered it to be the case, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's
because
go ahead.
I was going to say, because if you've held that the plaintiffs have a constitutional right to a stable climate, the only way to ensure that constitutional right is for the courts to effectively strike down the operations of the domestic fossil fuel industry and enjoin them, enjoin the coal industry, enjoin the oil industry, enjoin the natural gas industry from operating. And the idea of Neil Gorsuch and his buddies allowing that to go through, I just can't see that.
That's fine, but the stakes are such that if the thing were successful, you'd essentially shut down all fossil fuel production, which is why the Trump administration and the Obama administration before them, to be sure, to be truthful, was trying to say that these 21 high school kids did not have what's called standing. They did not have the right to bring such a lawsuit because they hadn't suffered the damage of the future yet. But then this most recent thing was that the Trump administration, correct me if I'm wrong, dear, asked for a court that was above the people that spoke the other day, you know, a higher court, to basically take the case over and reject it and say that we don't even have to have a hearing about it. It's all, forget the whole thing. It's a non-starter, right? And that's what the lower court guy said couldn't happen. Is that
exactly true? Exactly. The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals is essentially saying, let this case play out. Let there be a hearing and let there be a trial on the merits. And what the Trump administration is seeking is to have the Supreme Court essentially say, no, wait a minute, this is an inherently meritless lawsuit and we're going to kill it dead, essentially.
And so, go ahead, Mariah.
Well, so we did an episode about this on December 18th of 2017. The other concern I think that we had sort of talked about then is that some of the U.S. attorneys are afraid that if the plaintiffs go forward with this case, it will allow, as DR had said, a feeding frenzy of lawsuits over people claiming damage by federal government inaction, right? So that's one of the tenets that may be used to sort of argue against it. If, you know, like, if we let this happen, then everyone's going to say, well, you didn't do this for me, so we're going to sue you, you know, federal government.
And then there's all kinds of additional unrelated kinds of cases that might be brought up, right?
Right.
Yes, and I mean, DR has discussed the ups and downs of this, but let me just, what I want to do is go back for a moment to the reason the high school kids feel good today is because even if the Supreme Court eventually rejects the whole lawsuit, as it likely would, DR, because the trial can go forward, it is now possible for the high school students with their lawyers to introduce into a court of law all kinds of scientific evidence, right? I mean, and they can have discovery, I guess, from the federal government and get documents, but certainly put into the public record the case that climate change is real. Is that kind of the victory here?
I would say so, and definitely the attorney for the plaintiffs, they're basically looking forward to the case and for the discovery process and the introduction of evidence, the abundant evidence that we've discussed, you know, for the past several years, that the federal government knew going all the way back to the Johnson administration, if not earlier, the fossil fuel industry knew, and that, you know, the fossil fuel industry engaged in sort of chicanery and also using its power to influence government not to take action to reduce emissions. This is obviously something that the Trump administration is not keen about having introduced in a trial court.
Do you think, DR, I mean, you know, I agree with your skepticism over this actually going through this current Supreme Court and passing, but, you know, at the same time, if all this data gets put, I mean, I guess we've seen that this data doesn't necessarily do anything, but, you know, all this information about climate change and how it's humans and human health and human flourishing, you know, and it's put out for public record in front of all of these judges, and then they say, yeah, but we're going to rule in favor of the fossil fuel companies. I mean, won't that look terrible for the judges who rule in favor of the fossil fuel companies?
My response is that I don't think Gorsuch would care. I don't think Thomas would care. I don't think Alito would care. I don't think Roberts would care. I don't think Kennedy would care.
But I guess I'm with Mariah on this one. I think that there is a, it's a victory to have this stuff in the public record, because I can't, I guess I don't know the exact mechanism, but it seems pretty clear to me that if you've got evidence introduced in one case, then it will influence subsequent cases, maybe for good or ill. But if you have on record scientific evidence, that has to make it easier for the next person to make the next challenge and to continue fighting the case, because these things aren't going to go away. I mean, I doubt that. I mean, there'll always be some other angle to bring the lawsuit. And I think we've talked a lot, I mean, this about the fact that the smoking cases went the same way. For years and years and years, they lost until they started to win. And here's a case, here's finally an instance where this legal principle of the public trust seems to be getting a hearing, which is a far cry from where it was a couple of years ago, where it just got thrown out of court. People didn't even want to hear it, right? And now we're maybe on the verge of actually having a full trial, which can only be a good thing. And I guess the other thing I would say is that we have to not be blinded by the fact that we have these jokers on the Supreme Court now. I mean, that's why we have elections, and we're going to put more thoughtful people on the Supreme Court, and that's why it's important, right? So we want to be, you don't want to be wait until you've got nine friendly people in the Supreme Court to prepare the ground. I mean, these people were talking about Second Amendment, these bad guys were talking about the Second Amendment as a personal right to hold arms in 1980, right? And they didn't get it to the Supreme Court for 20 years, but they finally got it there, right? That's the attitude we have to take, the long, long view of this. Anyway, I, for my part, am personally happy that this trial will go on, and we will see, right? We'll just see where it goes. I mean, I just in passing, there's I've been following a podcast on the Climate Workshop, I think it's called. I may have mentioned it a couple weeks ago, by is Tim DeChristopher and some of the other people that have been doing civil disobedience. And there's a whole set of legal principles that we've talked about behind that. It was second set of sort of necessity principle, says I had to break the law because there was no other way to be safe. I mean, we can talk about that again in some other show, but these overriding legal principles may be useful in the fight for climate in the courts over the coming decades. So there you go. Ooh, so I'll take off my wig and my heavy black robe stop being on the Supreme Court now. Some other stuff did happen this past week besides that that public trust case. I heard that there were lots of low-level kinds of protests and little victories here and there. We haven't mentioned it yet, but there was a victory that there's a pipeline down in Louisiana that the judge overturned or put a halt in. There's lots of things going on. One of them that I had heard about, maybe one of you has heard as well, is that down in the city of Providence, Rhode Island, not so far from where we are now, in Providence, there was a hearing for the offshore drilling proposal that our so-called president has said. Now, just keep in mind that the Trump administration has said they're going to open the entire eastern seaboard for oil drilling, which, of course, has engendered a lot of opposition. And so one way to quiet the opposition is to have, instead of having a true public hearing in the old-fashioned sense of a hearing, they're essentially having this trade show with little booths where you can talk one-on-one with somebody from one of the companies that will benefit. And they tried to do that in Providence, and my understanding is it didn't go so well. Did either of you guys hear about that?
Yeah. Well, speaking of Tim DeChristopher, the Climate Workshop podcast hero you were talking about, and also, you know, just to note for Tim DeChristopher, he's Bitter 70. If you haven't seen that movie, it's a pretty interesting movie where he, you know, falsely bid on a bunch of oil and land leases.
Yes.
Yeah. So this Tim DeChristopher guy was you know, renowned activist. He was down in Providence, and he saw this sort of, like, you know, as you said, trade show booth approach to this public hearing, and said, okay, this is not okay. And there was a little, I think there was a protest going on outside where people were sort of trying to protest the structure, but, and it was somewhat effective, but DeChristopher took a little footstool, put it in the middle of the meeting room, and made it into an open mic speaking session. So all of a sudden, you know, he's on a footstool. I mean, he's literally up on his soapbox and he's telling, you know, voicing his opposition. And there were, I guess there were 40 people who got up on this stool and spoke it to the open mic.
One at a time, I hope.
Yeah. One at a time. Yep. And, you know, I guess that it worked. It was effective. I mean, I don't know how effective, but at least the you know, one of the organizers sort of came in and said, all right, you know, we hear your complaints and we agree this was not the best format for this meeting and we apologize and we'll do better in the future. So at least it sent the message that people's voices need to be heard and that they're not going to, you know, sort of stand for it when you try and, because essentially the setup was to kind of make it so that, you know, voices couldn't really come together in an effective way.
Well, I was struck when I thought it was sort of poignant that the man who came in, as you just said, the person from the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management essentially apologized and said that we hear you, whatnot. My feeling is that he is probably, from reading the article, is probably a career guy who wanted to do the right thing. Right, and was put on the spot to have this trade show sham of a hearing, and finally, I guess his conscience got the better of him, and he admitted that it was better to have the public speaking aspect of it. I mean, I don't know, but it seems.
Yeah.
I mean, when the pipeline was being proposed for my town here, they did essentially the same thing. Instead of having a hearing, you went into a room, or they got a place at the Best Western nearby, and they had little science project displays around the perimeter where you could learn about what was the root of the pipeline and all these nice little facts. But there was no organized, coherent presentation where you could stand up and speak to the whole group. And I think maybe one lesson is that we should all be more aware and ready for this kind of skullduggery in the future, that when they say they're going to have a hearing, it's not really a hearing. It's going to be some kind of sham that where you're going to be not allowed to actually speak. I mean, I'm good on those guys. I can just see that image. It's, all I can think of is, you remember the show, the movie Officer and a Gentleman? Right? Did you ever see that movie? So what the actress is in the factory, she just gets up on her chair with the sign and is the sort of signal moment where the union starts to become real, right? To have Tim DeChrister, I can just see he's probably in a hotel, there's probably a nice braid rug underneath him, quiet lighting, and he takes a chair and gets in the middle of the room and starts talking. That would have been a scene. So there's that. Then there's other. There were protests, Mariah. You were talking before about protests here in Massachusetts, New Hampshire, Maine, that brought together some unlikely bedfellows, right?
Yeah, right. So there was, a protest against the drilling for oil and gas off the shores of New England, which the Trump administration just passed a new plan for that, and. You know, this article in the Boston Globe talked about how it's you know, forged a bipartisan coalition of fishermen, environmental advocates, industry groups, and scientists against it. And so you have sort of, in some ways, unlikely bedfellows, not necessarily, but, you know, the environmental advocates, of course, are saying they don't want it. And then you have the fishermen saying, you know, George's Bank is the richest fishing ground in the world, and you know we have to protect it with our lives, since that is their lives. I mean, their livelihood, fishermen, their livelihood depend, fisher people, their livelihood depends on it. And so, you know, they all kind of came together to make a pretty vocal protest against it. And I'm not 100% sure about this, but Charlie Baker. Sent a letter to Ryan Zinke declaring his opposition to drilling in the waters off of Massachusetts. So he's trying to pull a Rick Scott right? Rick Scott down in Florida said, you know, well, I don't want any drilling off of my shores. And Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke said, okay. And so
we'll see if we get the same deal.
Yeah, it'd be nice if we get the same deal, exactly.
So there you go. There's some opposition that comes out of nowhere to these things. Don't feel alone or distressed, because there are other people fighting the same fight, see the same kinds of terrible things going on, and are taking action, right?
Yeah. The group that came together was, there's some pictures of them. They all were sort of dressed up as fish. They had fish costumes on and different things, you know, as part of their protest, and said no offshore drilling and big oil spills that they were, you know, walking around in. It was pretty funny.
That visual stuff has a lot of merit.
It does.
All right, well, we got to put it down there. Let me say that we'll put up links to most of what we talked about at the blog. It'll be at massclimateaction.org/blog. You can find us on Facebook at /massclimateaction. You can listen to us directly on your smartphone using all those super modern, cool device applications where you get podcast distribution apps, right? There's a whole bunch of them now. So we'll close where we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the reckless policies of the new administration not be accepted as normal, and that the United States put a long-term and equitable price on carbon. So thanks for being here, DR.
Thanks.
Thanks, Mariah, for being here.
Thank you.
And thanks to everyone for listening. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool. All right, I better save that.